This is Lehigh Valley Discourse, and you are listening to Wellness Lehigh Valley. I am your host, Sally Hanlon. Wellness is important to a balanced lifestyle, and more and more, we as humanity are figuring out how certain elements can lead to positive results. From mental health to environment, including all things that can affect your wellness, I am happy to invite you into conversations on ways to improve and think differently about wellness in the Lehigh Valley. And my topic tonight is going to be a little different from some others that I have provided to you listeners. It's called Understanding the Basics of End-of-Life Care. None of us get out of this life alive. To be born means that there will be another major labor transition in our lives, the labor of death. The challenge for those of us supporting loved ones at the end of life is how to approach it. It's scary, uncomfortable, unfamiliar territory. Most of our efforts have been to keep us and our families healthy. So how do we approach someone when those efforts no longer matter? And is it okay? And tonight I'm speaking from personal experience because I wanted to share with all of you listeners something that I recently went through. I had much stress and confusion about a family member that was in the last stage of life. I was doing everything to try and keep her moving and healthy, and I was stressing myself out and therefore really not a help to her. So I found my guest, Tia McCown, and then I began to understand how many of my peers might be experiencing similar situations. I'm in that age group where we're losing parents, where we're losing spouses and partners. And this caused me to want to bring Tia to you tonight. So without further ado, Tia McCown, welcome.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I just am so grateful for the time that we shared together, Sally, and I just am grateful to be here on this program and to share some of my experience as a caregiver, as well as some of the things that I've learned over the years that I can provide from our clinical experience.
Okay. Well, let's first start about you and your background, because you have some interesting degrees behind your name, and I'd like our listeners to understand who Tia is.
Sure. So we're all caregivers, and I started as a caregiver, as taking care of family members at an early age, my grandfather, and then also from there went to college, Lafayette. And
didn't realize you were in Lafayette.
Yes, right down the road. And one of the things that was really pivotal was an interdisciplinary course with physics and religion course. And it was very early on with MRI and HMOs just coming onto the scene. And we were doing an ethics class, and that interdisciplinary class really grabbed me. And I went on to seminary at Princeton Seminary, did clinical pastoral, got my Master of Divinity, did some clinical pastoral training at the University of Minnesota Hospital, and that all brought me to not only my own caregiver journey with my mother, but also to experience with hospice. And from all that, I started a company called the Boots and Wings Project, and also became a celebrant for people who are struggling with folks who have passed away and just don't know how to let go and need to bury them as well. So a lot of things.
You're not that old. So a lot of things. Well, listen, you mentioned Boots and Wings Project. Why don't you share a little bit about Boots and Wings with our listeners?
Yeah. So the Boots and Wings Project really came out of all my experiences, realizing that there's a lot of compassionate people. There's an army of compassionate people, and they wear these boots, and they are heroic in a way. They have these capes, and they're still unseen in a lot of ways. It's the quiet work. We have grandparents taking care of grandchildren and people who are taking care of both children and older adults. We have aunts and uncles who are being cared for by neighbors, all kinds of scenarios. And we need to kind of transform how we do our caregiver journey. And so that's the Boots and Wings Project. I have boots and I have a butterfly in the logo. It's education. It's really important for us to empower ourselves. I see caregivers as heroes. So the Boots and Rings Project is really your CAPE. It's communication, it's awareness, it's prevention and planning, and empowerment, empowering yourselves. So I want to do that training, and so I consult now with organizations and nonprofit groups, churches, other faith organizations, and family groups. And that's led me to some other public speaking. So we just want people to learn what they need to know about how to care more efficiently and get all their ducks in a row before a crisis.
Well, I can attest to that. I'm an example of the stress relief that you provided to me when I was going through this with my relative, because I was driving myself crazy. I just couldn't figure out what I could do because she wasn't receptive to anything I was suggesting. So I remember one comment that I made to you is, she just wants to eat ice cream, and ice cream has sugar, and she has cancer. And, you know, you said to me, so what? I mean, we're at the end of life, and what difference does it make? It's something that she wants.
Yeah. Yeah, being able to really honor the patient for whom you're caring is a balancing act between knowing what to do there and knowing what to do for their safety and kind of understanding the timeline. So that's navigating some of those squirrely places. And we need to do that together. Your greatest resource is locally. Who are the people in your community that, you know, can support you as well? And we help you figure out what questions to ask. And we do it through this grab-and-go book.
Yeah, and you had mentioned the grab-and-go book to me. I haven't gotten mine together yet, but that's on my list. And this is something, regardless, you don't have to be in your last chapter. This is something that everybody should be doing. So why don't you share a little bit about what this book is and how it is used?
Okay, so it's not, so I, you have the book, or we teach you how to have the book, and I give you the guts for the book, but it's still a process for you to own the information and material that you want to integrate. So often, the healthcare system may have our story, your schools may have your child's story, somebody else has your story, but you have all of the pieces of your story. You know who are your own trusted network. And you need to compile and tell your story, and you need to do it before a crisis. So that's what we're working towards, is having people do this. So one of the simple things that takes away a lot of the time effort that comes with just coordinating care is, we as children, and if we're taking care of an older person, don't always know all of their providers. So when you start going to a provider with your parent or your loved one, or somebody for whom you're responsible, the legal guardian, just grab the card from the doctor's office and put it into one of those 10 sleeves. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm mm-hmm. talking about?
Business card holder.
Business card holder sleeves. And then put that in your 3-ring binder. And that way you have all of the providers. When your loved one has a crisis, you're not going to remember all those names and numbers. But the hospital needs that information. If it's in your grab-and-go book, you'll have it at your fingertips. So one time I was doing a group with a financial advisor and another nurse who was on my team. And she was wonderful. And she shared that if she had had a family member bring in that book, that she would have taken that information first over 3 or 4 other people in an ER, because she knew she'd be able to access their providers. So being able to provide the information to the EMTs and to the police departments and to the hospital nurses and to the whole team, and give them freedom to do their job, also takes a whole lot of stress out of the system. I do know another story. I have a person who was a wanderer, and the police were looking, found this wanderer, and it took them 8 hours to find the family member because that wanderer had dementia. So that's a lot of time for our police officers to be trying to track somebody down and take care of them and get them to the right person. And of course, you as a family member or caregiver has concern. So those kinds of things, we can, with the right information in the right place, we're able to sort of limit some of those crises.
Well, and one of the things, too, that sort of struck me as you were talking about this, even though we may go to the same healthcare system in an emergency as we use otherwise, we might not have all of the information in that portal.
Oh, yeah.
And so
the portal problem.
Yeah. So this information, like if I'm having, a heart problem and I go to the hospital, they'll just assign me who is with the ER versus maybe the cardiologist that I've been going to.
Exactly.
You want to keep consistency of care. And again, this is at any age that you want to do this. What else would this Grab and Go book have in besides some of this medical information?
We love our little proprietary label program. Words are really hard to manage in a crisis. So we have stickers. We have allergy stickers, which are great for schools. When somebody arrives to provide care and they don't know and somebody's nonverbal or the family is panicking, you can look at a sheet of paper. And you can do this on your own when you're just thinking, oh, what do I have to get together? You can put stickers on a sheet of paper that say, oh, this person has a cardiac event. It can be crutches. It can be an allergy to things. It can be a vaccination. But some way to visually signal the garden of your whole health situation is. So that's really important because it collapses the time of having to read through multiple written reports.
Yeah.
They're signposts to get emergency personnel to the right place.
Yeah, and that's really critical, especially if you've got someone that is on the edge of dementia or Alzheimer's,
Or if they're in pain and they can't talk.
Yeah.
It's funny, we're talking about medication. I'm going to tell a story from my own family. My mother-in-law fell. We went to the ER, and she looked at my husband and said, what medication am I on?
Yeah.
And this is, we do this. Mm-hmm. And even doing this, it's hard to have the information that you need right at your fingertips. And so I'm a advocate for that, communication, awareness. Preparation will empower you. Put on your cape.
Okay. And should this book also have things like power of attorney, some of the legal stuff or not? Does that not need it in this book?
Yeah, no, it definitely has those things.
Okay.
We have, like I said, we have about 17 to 18 pages, depending on your family situation. Not everybody can afford to go to an attorney right away, but we have some other little hacks that we can help you talk through that. There's websites where you can get information, and I'm not talking about some of the like legal websites, but where there's information where you can get guidance on how to put the information together so that you are giving authorization properly. And any signpost is, and any information is better than none to help people care for you and your family and having it available. But one thing people will always ask me, Sally, is, why don't you have an app for that? We have so many apps out there, and the apps change. We also already have really good tools. So I challenge anybody who's listening, let their family members know, have you put the red star next to your name in your phone?
I have not. What does that mean?
There's a place where you can put an emergency contact, red star. That gives authorization to any person who's coming to help you, saying, oh, this person is you can call them to let them know what's going on. It's an emergency contact. It's just a little red star. You just put it by your name and it pops up so that the EMTs or the police can assist you. So just putting we have the tools. We're just not entering the data and the information to give clearance. And some people love their devices. And there's all kinds of health apps already embedded in our Apple phones and our Android phones.
Well, and that's assuming it's charged.
And that's assuming it is charged, which is why we need a physical copy as well as a digital copy.
Yeah, I noticed that this morning before...
Good point.
before we got together this morning, I had a project, and I had my phone on charge all night, and I woke up this morning, and it was below, like, 3. I mean, red, I was thinking, oh, man, and I needed to use it. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, what all is on this phone that is so critical to my, doing everything every day? And I was like, whoa. And so, that's that red star. So that's going on after this show, Tia.
I'll show you mine.
Okay. We'll work on that.
Yeah.
So we're about to wrap up the first part of this. So listeners, I want you to continue listening because Tia is going to bring you some more information. And this is really... very good information for you to be aware of, regardless of where you are, where your family are, is in their life cycle. So we're going to take a short break. You're listening to Wellness Lehigh Valley with our guest, Tia McCown, founder of Boots and Wings Project, supporting the end-of-life transition for clients and families.
Introducing Home for the Holidays. 'Tis the season to shop small and share big. A special 8-episode podcast. Each week, we'll spotlight local makers and retail stores that make our region shine and show how shopping small keeps local dollars close to home. Tune in, get inspired, and join the hashtag BuyLocal movement. Listen at WDIY.org, watch on our YouTube channel, or listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to our Wellness Lehigh Valley Discourse Program. We are talking about understanding end-of-life care with our guest, Tia McCown, founder of Boots and Wings Project. And before we went to break, we were talking about a very important book for anybody. It doesn't have to be end-of-life. It's a grab-and-go that you should have it available. But now I'd like to turn the emphasis a little bit more on the end-of-life end. And I know I got very confused with the situation between understanding what palliative and hospice care is. I thought I was in hospice care, then somebody said, no, it's palliative, and we just went back and forth. So, Tia, can you help us understand the difference in when these various terms should be used?
So, yes and no. I'm not a medical provider, okay. So but I am a chaplain who has done clinical care for hospice. So the way that I think is easiest for me to explain to people the difference, palliative is a word that starts with P-A, and so is pain.
Okay.
So palliative care is pain management as a way of providing. It's part of the care that you need that addresses whatever are the pain issues. And there can be chronic pain. So you do not have to be a person who is dying to receive palliative care. You can get palliative care if you have chronic pain or even if you have an acute but longer-term care issue. Hospice, starting with an H, is more a system of where you get help, a group of people who will come and help and support you through whatever your terminal diagnosis is. So you may have a diagnosis that has a terminal, it's not going to be cured, okay. But we don't know what the timeline is for the time of death. But it's just, you know, that there is not necessarily any treatment at the time. So one of the things that you may not have any pain, so you might not need that, but you may need help with taking care of your diet or maybe some additional help with getting in and out of bed, or you might need some of those activities, the daily living support.
Personal care,
yep, all those things. And so, but the other thing about hospice, with that extra support, sometimes people will come on hospice and get much better support than they could in the hospital, because, you know, all these medical systems have all kinds of regulations on top of them, and depending on what category you're in, there's regulations that are way above my ability to talk about them. However, when you're in hospice, the lovely thing is that you can get that extra support, and people will begin to thrive again, and the quality of life is better, and they're focused on more of the right things. They're getting the emotional and grief support they need. And that is really helpful. If we wait too long for hospice, then it may be very quick. It can be both. It requires you really talking to your family. And also, if you have a faith community, talking to your faith community about, is it time for hospice? Talking and knowing your agencies, understanding the agencies in your area. Do your research before you get there. Know who your community providers are in both, home health and in hospice. And
well, I know with my situation, my relative had a fall and ended up in the hospital. And when she came out, I was looking at hospice. But I was concerned, and we all had in the family that hospice was sort of end of life. And, once you're in it, forget it. You can't get out of it. And she was not at that place. And so the family, other than me, turned down the idea of working with hospice in mm-hmm. that time frame. And then 3 months later, we needed hospice. And we had great service, and Lehigh Valley Hospital Hospice was great. But I'm wondering if there was something we could have done during that interim time period that would have made it a lot easier for everybody.
It's a tough question. Everybody's journey is different, and everybody will experience difficulties and hiccups and questions and try to find their way, and it's really hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard, and again, I want to go back to just being gentle with yourself as a caregiver, being kind to yourself as an advocate. You are doing the best you can, and don't beat yourself up because the system is changing, the players are changing, the hospitals are buying and selling each other. You know, it's tricky. It's really tricky. And you are also taking care of yourself. And that's a really important message as in the midst of this and having support around you, why we encourage people to build wraparound teams, because you don't always know the answer and you can't always get the answer. Sometimes we can help you get there, but it's easier if you have put some things in place so you have handrails when you get to that place.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It makes sense. And, you know, I put it into practice after talking to you, and what it enabled me was to be able to have the last month or so with my relative where we actually had a really good time together.
Mm-hmm.
We had some interesting conversations while she was still fairly able to,
mm-hmm.
And I felt like I really got to know her mm-hmm. better because we had that one-to-one time together, and we didn't. We talked about all subjects. We talked yeah. about death. We talked about afterlife, you know, so yeah.
I call those careful conversations.
Okay.
I love that you were able to do that. It's so hard to sometimes broach that topic, but it makes the experience so much more meaningful as you're going through it. And not everybody gets there because of dynamics. And there's after someone passes, there's bereavement and grief support, but we also can help folks with untethering from anger and alienation if that's their story.
Well, I know it enabled me to go through her passing a lot easier than I probably could have without having mm-hmm. that opportunity to spend the time
mm-hmm.
yeah, and have those conversations. So mm-hmm. I do want to on air say thank you, Tia, for what you did and the references and resources you provided mm-hmm. to me as well.
Did I tell you the five things that we encourage people to talk to their loved one about sometime? And this is good for any time as a child or at the end of life, but saying, of course, I love you.
Mm-hmm.
So this is on your hand, like I'm touching my thumb right now. I love you. Thank you. And get specific, like thank you for the time that you took me to buy the green dress. It was so much fun. I forgive you. Do you forgive me? And then goodbye. And that can work whether at any time of transitioning in life or at the end of life. So, you know, if somebody's going off to college, maybe you want to have that conversation before someone goes to school, or maybe you want to have it when work is changing, or all those five things are really sort of special ways to have careful conversation.
Well, and thankful gratitude conversations.
Mm-hmm.
Our life is so fast-paced today. I mean, we go from minute to minute, and we don't necessarily stop to take a breather.
Yeah.
So that is very good advice for anyone mm-hmm. at any time. Yes, thank you.
Slow it down.
yeah, we need to do that. So is there anything else that, as a caregiver, I mean, you have to take care of yourself physically and emotionally, mm-hmm. but anything else that you've noticed with the years of experience you've had that caregivers tend to overlook or caregivers maybe aren't as aware of?
I think the emotional burden is one of the things that's hardest for caregivers because they're trying to manage everything.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, they're recognizing that even as they're managing all of the things and all of the people that are in the orb, they are also grieving. They have what's called anticipatory grief.
Okay.
And that can, you're anticipating something. And the patient, meanwhile, may be going through a shrinking world. So they also have a kind of grief for loss of their universe as they know it. Mm-hmm. And in those two, there's going to be a little bit of collision of and so there are times where people will say, I'm so angry, I can't believe that I yelled at my mother. Again, be gentle with yourself. Find a way to have a wraparound team. And if it gets really bad, there are wonderful programs called respite programs. And caregivers, there's places where you can go and just sleep for 3 days. And organizations will come in and support your loved one if you're aging at home or if you are needing to have them go to a community because they need some higher level of care. You can work that out, and there are resources for you. And if you don't know where to find them, just email me. You can, put WDIY in the subject heading and shoot off an email to answersforcaregivers@gmail.com. And I will try and at least point you in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one of the things I think it's important to underscore here is that you are looking to educate and be a resource. Mm-hmm. So, and I think that's really important when you don't know where to turn. And that's exactly what happened to me. I went to my massage therapist and she said, "You're stressed out." And I said, "Yeah, I know, I've got this situation." And she said, "I want you to talk to someone." Mm-hmm. So she led me to Tia, and it was extremely beneficial for me. Mm-hmm. So, realize that there are the resources there. And I did use respite care for my relative for a period of time. We had a vacation scheduled for a year. Mm-hmm. And I was
I remember
seeing this person like every day. I was at her house trying to take care of her. And I was like, how do I do this? Because it was more than my husband and I going on vacation. So we tapped into respite care, and it was so nice to just get that breather. I think at that point it was about 6 weeks straight that I was really in support of her. So,
yeah. Respite is really important. Again, that taking care of each other, building a wraparound team, delegating. Part of what we train, teaching people to have those conversations about delegating amongst family members. And if you don't have a big family or your family is at a distance, what do you do? Need to still have a wraparound team. It's all the little things that we want to anticipate that we can control to open up the space,
right?
So that and we being able to do that in groups and with nonprofit organizations and businesses can be super, super helpful to caregivers by evaluating their HR policies, to looking at, is your bereavement as we are going into we're in a time where there's more need than people to meet the needs. So are your policies up to date and caring? If you are a caring company, you may want to evaluate, and that can be, construction. But what are your HR policies that consider the caregiver and the amount of caregiving that we are anticipating coming forward, especially as the boomers hit the healthcare system? All the things. There's so many.
Well, and we could go on for a lot longer, but we're in our last minute or so. Is there any last words of encouragement or that you'd like to share again with our listeners?
I just want to thank you for being the heroes. You are compassionate. You are caring. You are giving of yourselves. And don't underestimate your power and your strength, even in the midst of being exhausted and annoyed and all of that. And just know there is a lot out there for you, and we can do our best to help take off some of the struggle.
And that email address again is
answersforcaregivers@gmail.com. Very simple.
Okay. Tia, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us this evening. I hope that we have helped people in current situations or in future situations with the words that you've been able to share.
Thank you. I hope people will do this early before the crisis. So
Red Star, right?
Red Stars. Lots of little things.
Thank you also, listeners, for taking the time for this conversation. You can also find past episodes and other public affairs programming at WDIY.org and on major podcast platforms. I am Sally Hanlon, and this is WDIY 88.1 FM, and we'll see you next time on Wellness Lehigh Valley.